Before we begin, I just want to say I hope all of our listeners are doing well in these crazy, scary, and uncertain times. It's been an anxious time for all of us, not knowing when this outbreak will peak and subside, how many it will infect, and when life as we know it will resume. To that end, I checked in with Dr. Rachel Bussman, who is the Senior Director of the Anxiety Disorder Center at the Child Mind Institute, a leading voice on pediatric mental health issues. Dr. Bussman and I talked about this current outbreak and how it can be stress and anxiety producing, not just for adults, but also for kids. But my biggest takeaway is how you should address this topic with your child of any age. Should you answer their questions, and how much detail should you give? Most importantly, will the angst they are experiencing today manifest into a long-term issue? It's important to give this a listen and see how this affects you on a deeply personal level. I also want to say that Dr. Bussman has provided a list of really good articles and resources that parents should check out if they're concerned about the impact that this is having on their kids, including virtual counseling sessions with the Child Mind Institute. I'll mention all of her info at the end of this episode, and as always, I'm going to be posting all of the resources on my Facebook and Instagram pages. Now here's Dr. Rachel Bussman. This is All Good in the Motherhood with Teresa Priolo.
Okay, I'm sure you are probably inundated lately.
Well, I mean, I would say that this is such a trying time, and we definitely are working to adapt on a moment-by-moment basis. But I think your question is a good one, which is that this is an anxiety-provoking time. And so we are definitely trying to help as many people as possible with resources and, you know, appointments for, via telehealth for our current patients and consultation for new patients. It's definitely a time that requires a lot of flexibility and adaptation.
So first of all, one of the things that's super interesting to me is that being in news, I know that I am sort of inundated with news headlines, updates, alerts on my phone, all of those things that go with the job. And by and large, me as a journalist / citizen can manage them pretty well. But now I'm starting to see some of my friends who are not in media absorb the same amount of information in a day and don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to process it out. And I feel like that might be one of the things that is coming along with this epidemic. It's people who normally are not this plugged in are incredibly plugged in, and now everybody's anxiety is going up.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that, you know, you're in media, so you're used to this amount of information and the type of information that you're getting. And I totally agree with you that there's sort of this bombardment of constant information on websites, news and articles and alerts. And so it is really important to try to balance that. If you notice it, that's great. But I think a lot of people don't necessarily notice the saturation point, but having some safeguards in place or just some practical tips to mitigate some of the effects, it's really important.
So let's talk about what we're actually seeing or what we're actually hearing.
Sure.
You know, again, when people think about stress and anxiety, I think most people tend to assume that has to do with an adult or somebody who's able to process those feelings. And that's not really true, is it?
That's such an interesting question as I was processing it, because I work with so many kids and teens with anxiety. So when I think of anxiety or processing stress, I think of that all people are vulnerable. I do think the thing that's important is that oftentimes the work that we do in treating anxiety disorders is when we're looking at anxiety that's persisting and excessive to the situation and, you know, unmanageable. The situation right now is that there are a lot of very real stressors that people are reacting to in actually a pretty normal way. And we want to be both sensitive to that and provide support for everybody and also those who are vulnerable already with anxiety.
So for the kids or teens that you're hearing from, as you just saw, I have a toddler.
Right.
He's not asking any questions, but he does know that something's different.
For sure.
And I think this totally runs the gamut, right? From kids who just feel like something's a little off, why are mommy and daddy around all the time?
Right.
To people who understand what is happening and can't process it.
For sure. And I think there is, you captured it, because there's really a range, right? And so the thing that's really important is to follow your child's lead. And so if you have a toddler who's saying like, mommy or daddy's home, you want, that's not the time to sit down and have a very in-depth conversation about the state of the world, but to acknowledge what the child's actually saying and meet it with, yeah, mommy's home, mommy's working from home right now, or daddy's working here, which is really appropriate for the age of the child. Whereas a slightly older child, you're obviously, they know that that things are happening, that school is closed. And so you really need to follow the lead of your child and find out first what they understand, correct any misinformation, and then answer their questions.
But if you have a kid, and this is, I've heard adults say this, so I'm sure a kid could say this. If you have a kid saying, I'm going to get the virus and die, mommy's going to get the virus and die, daddy's going to get the virus and die, or I'm going to give the virus to grandpa and he's going to die, whatever it is, how do you back a kid away from that ledge? And how do you as a parent or caregiver ensure that you don't make the situation worse by actually telling them the truth?
Right. Well, so actually there are two things there. So one is the parent response, which can sometimes get merged with what the child is saying or how they're behaving. And so the first part is to step back and separate that and then have a good response, right? So if a child, so we want to make sure that we're getting developmentally appropriate information, and there are lots of resources out there, probably in some ways too many. I mean, I know we on our, at Childmind Institute have for, like already set up a huge repository of resources for things like how to talk to your children, at what age, strategies. So we have a website for that at childmind.org/coronavirus. There are also some really good resources, like NPR has a cartoon that's about the coronavirus, and it's in sort of a cartoon diagram/graphic representation. And so you can certainly show that to kids. I think if kids are expressing worries that are grounded somewhat in reality, but also go off towards anxiety, we want to help manage that information. So I know that you're worried that you could get ill, and here's what we know about kids and getting ill, or here's how we're protecting ourselves with regard to grandma or grandpa. And so I think it's important to correct the information and give just accurate information without making promises about things that we don't know. The second part, managing sort of your own response, which I think is challenging because we as adults are having our own thoughts and feelings in reaction to the current situation. And we may inadvertently project those thoughts and feelings onto our child, or like you said, inadvertently make it worse. So for example, maybe you have thoughts about your child not being able to go to ballet class or not being able to be on play dates. And they might also feel something in response to not seeing their friends, but they might be two different things, which is why it's important to say, yeah, ballet isn't happening right now in real time. What do you think about it? Because the thing your child might be upset about might not actually be the thing that you think they're upset about. And so similarly, I think our reaction is obviously more sophisticated in some ways. We're thinking a month down the line, 2 months down the line. And so we need to check that in ourselves before we just jump to answering our kids' questions or providing them with too much information that's going to be bombarding them.
You know, I know a lot of parents feel like less is more when it comes to talking to kids, but there are certainly a whole handful of parents who feel like, I'm going to be honest with my child. If my child asks a question, I'm going to respond in an honest way, or they don't feel like their child should be talked to like a kid. What are your thoughts on that?
That's you're asking a lot of really good questions. I think it's a balance, right? So not taking your child's cues or answering their questions just isn't really the appropriate thing to do in this situation. They already know information. So you actually are in the best position to find out what they know and correct misinformation. On the other hand, sometimes we can fall into the trap of saying, oh, my child is so smart, or my child's so mature, they really can handle this information, when forgetting that they are still 8 or 12 or, you know, 5. And so we want to be careful not to provide excessive level of detail, which is why saying to a child, like starting a conversation with, what do you know? what questions do you have really takes your child's lead in sort of outlining what they will need to know.
What ages does this really work for, though? At what point sort of is the cat out of the bag here? You know, is this appropriate for a teenager as well as a six-year-old?
Well, so if what you're asking is how young or how old is old enough or young enough to give information, I think really it's all ages. Obviously, like you said, your toddler or children who are really before school age and are really still navigating language, obviously you're going to follow their lead more in terms of how they're acting and what they're doing. And if they say, oh, daddy's home or where's my babysitter, you don't need to sit down and have a lengthy conversation, but you need to acknowledge what they're saying and doing. Other than that, really, if kids are asking, we really want to validate the emotions that they're having and really be available to answer questions, provide some reassurance, and just explain what you as a parent are doing and what you expect of your child. Because actually, kids feel good when they know the routine, when they know what's expected of them and know what to expect from you.
Especially when we talk about kids who are, let's say, like 5 or 6 and older, even those in middle school where they're totally cognizant of everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, if your kid says to you, mommy, I'm stressed out, or mommy, I'm scared, or mommy, my tummy hurts, or something that runs the gamut there. Do you recommend parents turning around and saying, mommy's stressed too? Or does that heighten their anxiety?
That's a really good question. And again, I think it comes to balance, right? So I think let's say your child's learning to navigate the remote learning platform and it's changing sort of every day. And let's say your child says, like, this is hard. I don't like doing math on the computer. Or why did they change it? I liked it how it was last week. I think it's totally reasonable to say, you know what, Jackson, like, that is hard. You know what? It's hard for me to work on, you know, in the screened in porch and adjust to that. But I think the idea is that it's great to be transparent with your kids about your own experience and how you're overcoming it, rather than saying, yeah, you know what, I'm not really sleeping, or I'm not really, you know, I didn't even take a shower yesterday. Those are things that don't really show a level of coping. Whereas it's, to me, and I say this in front of my son and say, you know, we're all home, like, this isn't easy for anybody. Mm-hmm. But we're actually, here are some of the things we're doing to make it more manageable, or to make sure that we're staying on a schedule, or to make sure that we're keeping communication open.
All Good in the Motherhood, coming right back right after this. When it comes to school, so many of my friends, including my sister who has 3 kids, are all school age. They are totally thrown off by this. And the response I'm hearing is technology is such an integral part of their life already,
right,
that they kind of don't seem to grasp that this thing that they love so much for so many reasons is now being used against them almost, you know, as if like this thing that I love to play games on or even read, mm-hmm. I now have to be on this computer all day long and talk to somebody like this.
Oh, that's so interesting.
You know, I've heard that from a lot of the kids are like, well, it's not fun anymore because my computer used to be the place where I played my games or I played my video games. And now I'm staring at the screen for 4 or 5 hours a day. And it's just, it's not fun anymore. So what do we do with kids when it comes to school, especially since their worlds have been upended in this regard? They're not seeing their friends. The learning environment is different. Mom's not a good teacher.
Well, yeah, I will tell you that too. I mean, so the first thing I think is to appreciate your children as unique humans, right? So some kids are really savvy on the computer and maybe adjust to this quite well. Other kids might say something like what you're saying, this was fun and now it's not fun anymore. Or maybe it's just the stamina. There's some stamina related issues. Like, I think everybody in my house has said their eyes hurt today. And so I think appreciating that and having compassion for yourself and your child and communicating with your school. So I think schools or many of us are being so trying to be so flexible that I think if you notice, let's say your child really can't sit for the certain amount of time they're supposed to, communicating with the teacher and saying, this is what we can do, here's what we're not yet able to do, and here's kind of our rough plan of how we plan to get there in the coming days or week, seems reasonable. I think we sometimes worry that this is our child's only learning opportunity, when in fact it isn't. And so I think everybody I've talked to, patients, colleagues, everybody is navigating this educational platform in a different way, you know, school to school, grade to grade. And so really being compassionate and showing your child that you're compassionate also with flexibility, I think is really important.
When I think about the stressors in the home, obviously that spans the system, everybody from every socioeconomic status, race, creed, et cetera, can find one thing to stress out about in a day. But during this particular crisis, I think about the nurses and the doctors. I think about the healthcare workers, your frontline workers. I think about our teachers. Like, I think about people who a lot is being asked of them. Yeah. And that's outside of just even being a normal parent. Totally. So what do we say to those people? Because I feel like life right now has thrown a lot of people a curveball. Yeah. Almost everybody a curveball. Yeah. And the concern I have is that kids are going to see their parents, understandably, maybe not process it well themselves. They're just, something's going to fall through the cracks somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And one of the things that I think has been amazing, at least what I've seen, is real acts of kindness and real acts of just sort of finding your village and taking care of that village. So I think, you know, those who are frontline workers or teachers, I hope have a network where they can also be taken care of, right? It's hard to ask for help when you need it because you don't necessarily know what you need. And it's just more exhausting, frankly, to reach out. But I've seen a lot of acts of kindness in my villages that I'm experiencing in terms of like sending food to someone or, you know, other people in the same villages, let's say a teacher or a tutor or a firefighter. And so those things are really important. So I would say for those who are in these very intense and frontline positions, accepting help, which I think is so hard, especially when we're in a helping field or a helping profession, we just want to change the world. And so if someone says, I'm sending over some food for you, really taking that or accepting that help. And then again, being compassionate, right? So if you're working in a hospital or you're a teacher who's on Zoom and you're kitchen's messy, you got to let that go, right? Like, not everybody can do everything. And I think all of us have parts of our home and piles on the floor.
Or the whole home.
Oh, the whole home. And so really being able to say, like, really, I'm doing what I can, and that's enough right now. Because I think a lot of people feel very stressed in different ways. And that's where I think those connections and just checking in with college friends or mom group or, you know, fellow third graders of my, you know, son, it's really important so that we stay connected and in tune with what's going on.
My last question for you deals with the permanence of this. The governors of both New Jersey and New York, Connecticut, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and like, everybody keeps telling us this too shall pass. This is a finite period of time. This will be over at some point and we will all move on. It doesn't matter who you listen to, the message is the same. This is going to end. But what I as a parent fear, maybe not necessarily for my kid because he's so young, but for other parents and other kids that I see around, is that sure, the virus and the outbreak will end, but there are things that will linger. And that might be anxiety or stress or, you know, sort of some might even be irrational concerns with kids and parents. So how do we ensure that what is happening today doesn't prevent a long-term issue? Or can it? Is that even possible? Can an anxiety disorder in a child or a stress management or disorder in a child manifest from these 4, 6, 8, 10 weeks that we're experiencing?
So way to go out with a bang on the questions, right? So I think what I heard was two separate questions. So I'm going to try to answer them and cut me off if it's too much. So the first one is, or one that I heard is like, could this cause an anxiety disorder, right? And what we know about anxiety disorders is they don't just happen and result in response to something. Yes, we have something called post-traumatic stress disorder, which is really a response and a disorder that comes from directly experiencing a threat to you, your body, or your personal, you know, psyche. What we might see is an anxiety disorder brewing, but usually it comes from sort of a bunch of factors, maybe a little bit of genetic predisposition, maybe a couple situations, and also some things that are happening that maybe reinforce things like avoidance or disengagement. So that's the first part. The second part is like, are there any things we can be doing to sort of set ourselves up in a better place? And I think so one is everyone's hearing this too shall pass, but it sure doesn't feel like that right now, right? And so it's both sort of taking day by day, knowing that end point is there, but it doesn't feel like it's right on the horizon. But the things we can be doing to help our kids and ourselves are things that maybe seem not so important, but really are. So having routines, keeping as much on a schedule as possible, right? So knowing the day of the week, knowing what routine we're having, kind of eating and hydrating and getting some physical activity. I also think there are certain things we can't really do. So you can't really have your kid go on a play date and hang out with friends, right? That's not reasonable. But we want to make sure we're staying alert for things that our kids or any adults in the house might be avoiding due to fear. So for example, I have a yard, but I don't want to go out and even get the mail because I just feel too scared to even walk out of my house. That would be a red flag for me to say, I know that's really hard, Jackson. I keep giving my son's name, but like, I know that might be hard. And that's actually reasonable right now and really important to get fresh air. So we're going to open the door. We're going to walk to the end of the driveway because we don't want to inadvertently help reinforce behaviors that we actually think are appropriate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get that. And, you know, I know of a lot of parents who even say that they fear that their kids might have some sort of anxiety or stress management disorder, even just based on the kids' bathroom habits, you know, the way that they hold certain things in and don't go to the bathroom for a couple of days, things right. like that. And they wonder if today it's, you know, a sort of a knowing obstinance to using the potty. Tomorrow, what will it be? And they feel like this could all just explode, which would be the crisis after the crisis.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point, right? So maybe especially in younger kids, your toddler is not going to come up to your 3.5 or 4-year-old and say, you know, I'm not going to the potty because I'm actually experiencing some like tension, right? Like they can't do that. But again, let's say a parent's noticing it, like avoidance of using the bathroom or just some behavior that seems a little atypical, trying to both be relaxed about it and curious, right? So the last thing we want to do is jump in on like, we've got to sit on the potty, we've got to go to the bathroom, because we know that is not going to result in or like food, right? Getting really controlling about food. On the other hand, still presenting the food, still making going to the potty for younger kids fun, and just saying like, oh, you know, I just went to the bathroom, my tummy feels so much better when I go. Again, just kind of keeping a lot of it is keeping a calm exterior when you as the adult might not feel so calm inside, but it's what we call modeling non-anxious coping, which is so hard when we don't feel calm, but sometimes we have to say it even if we don't believe it, because we know that it's going to be better for our kid than saying like, you haven't gone to the bathroom in 2 days, like you've got to sit on the potty, or you haven't eaten, like you can't subsist on toast.
Right. Are there any mantras or any thing that you say with your child in your house on a daily basis that you help feel like keeps him in check and calm, and also makes you feel like you have control, that maybe we can impart on our listeners?
That's such a great question. I don't necessarily have like a mantra that I'm saying, but what I have been doing, so I do think that kind of a mantra can be super helpful. And I think there's some great like mindfulness apps that can be really helpful for parents, like Headspace or some of the other just ones that have like very brief guided meditations for them. Go Noodle is a really great website for kids and has some like movement breaks and yoga and mindfulness. We have more of a routine in my house. So I have a 9.5-year-old. And so in the morning, we have been absolutely, he would love to be in pajamas all day. We're absolutely not doing that. We wake up and he can lounge for a little bit, but we've been getting dressed. And every morning we just look at the schedule of things that need to happen for that day. So I've made him a list of must do's and can earn. So do 3 things, earn X. Do 5 things, earn Y. Do all these things, this. It's not fancy. I downloaded a calendar and printed it on like Pinterest, but it's just check boxes and it's very simple. So that when he just knows what to expect. So every morning we review that and we talk about the first few things he's going to tackle. Because he also knows I need to go outside, out into the porch.
Outside.
And I might not be able, outside, might not be able to get to him. And so we just know the things that are going to happen. So, and I think that's easy for a parent to do. Even if it's for a kid who is not reading yet, you could have a toothbrush, like draw a toothbrush on a piece of paper, you know, put a book on a piece. And just, I like checkboxes because it makes me feel accomplished. But I think kids do well with that too. It's a visual check of what's needed.
Rachel, thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Oh, it's my pleasure. I wish we could have interacted on better circumstances.
I know,
but hopefully we can. You can tell your family they behaved quite well.
My husband has my kid quarantined. Oh. It's the quarantine within the quarantine. Now he's in the bathroom I'm afraid to even go in there, but it is what it is. I'm almost might pretend that this is going on a lot longer, so I don't need to go.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe no news is good news.
Great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank
I look, look forward
take
to seeing
it.
You.
Me too. Yes. Hey, take care. You.
My thanks to Dr. Rachel Bussman. If you want to check out the Child Mind Institute, their website is childmind.org. They're also on Facebook and Instagram, and on all of their platforms, you'll see a whole host of information about how you can cope during the COVID-19 crisis. We've also posted a few articles directly from Dr. Bussman on my Facebook and Instagram pages. This is All Good in the Motherhood with Teresa Priolo, part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. This episode was recorded, edited, mixed, made awesome by Matt Onimus. The executive producers are myself, Matt Onimus, and Imad Ashgar. Byron Harmon is VP of News, and our vice president and general manager of Fox 5 is Lou Leone. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, or you just want to say hi, reach out to me on Twitter at Fox5Teresa or on Facebook, Teresa Priolo NY. And stay tuned for our next episode.